Welcome back to the Bitcoin Matrix, where critical thinkers meet. I'm your host, Cedric Youngelman. Before we dive in, if you get value from the show, subscribe on Fountain App for $5 a month. Every episode, a full day early, completely ad-free. Or grab any episode ad-free for just $1 after early access. Firefish is non-custodial Bitcoin-backed loans. Your keys stay in multi-sig the whole time. Don't sell your Bitcoin. Live off it. Firefish.io code matrix. Stampseed makes a titanium DIY kit that lets you hammer your seed words into solid metal. Fire resistant, waterproof, crush proof. Stampseed.com. Code matrix for 15% off. And new to the show this season, Club Orange is the location-based social network built for the Bitcoin community. Find Bitcoiners, meetups, and merchants near you. If you've ever wanted to meet the people behind the orange-pilled accounts you follow, this app is your map. Download Club Orange today in the App Store or Google Play. And in about 5 weeks, my family is heading to Camp Nakamoto, Bitcoin summer camp on a private island in Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire, June 18th through the 21st. Code Matrix for 15% off your tickets. Cabins, cookouts, sunset cruises, and Bitcoiners who actually know each other by Sunday. These are companies I personally use and believe in. Please support them so they can keep supporting the show. Links and codes for all of them are in the show notes. Today's guest is Bran Canstein, host of Bitcoin for Millennials. He started his show 3 years ago after a single Bitcoin Matrix episode flipped a switch in his head. Today, he's back in the seat that started it. His thesis, spiritual growth and perpetual financial anxiety are structurally incompatible. Bitcoin isn't a better money. It's the prerequisite for the inner life fiat stole. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with Bram.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
There is a short list of people in this space who, once you've had a conversation with them, you want to call them back within a year. Bran Canstein is on that list. The last time Bran was on this show, he told us Bitcoin wasn't a trade. He told us we were in a spiritual war. He said he'd orange pill Joe Rogan if he could. And he asked a question that stayed with me all year. Once you've understood Bitcoin, what comes next? Bram, one of my favorite people to think out loud with. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Matrix. How are you?
Very good, man. Yeah, that's a very sweet intro. Maybe the best I've ever heard. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get into it. You've been putting out a lot of, you've been prolific lately with your essays, and they've been moving. I'm really digging into them and enjoying them. And it's kind of, aligned with sort of a personal quest I've been on. So, first though, I'll go back to, I think it's almost been 3 years since August 28th, 2023, since you reached out. And now, you're doing Bitcoin for Millennials. It's Freedom for Millennials, a book and a psychedelic gathering in Colorado. What made the expansion feel necessary?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, yeah, first off, when I reached out to you, and I also told you this last time, but you were a big inspiration for me to start my podcast. I always thought that, your level of podcast was very high, and I really appreciate it. And I watched many episodes that helped me on my journey. So I'm still grateful for that. But I also think that, like, after some time, I kind of realized, and I'm not on the fence, but I'm thinking about at what pace I kind of want to transition from this Bitcoin for Millennials to Freedom for Millennials, right? Like, at one point I kind of felt like I think I've almost said everything about Bitcoin that I want to say or discussed everything, right? And when I started to think about, okay, but what has Bitcoin brought me, I think, and this is also part of the essay that I published today, it's like, you know, Bitcoin really frees your mind, at least in my case, right? Like, it helps you to opt out from this kind of like centrally organized and orchestrated illusion of reality, right? And I think we all live in the illusion of the reality, right? And we create our own reality. But I think when you're really attached to the fiat money reality, there's not a lot of space and time for yourself to go, like you said in the intro, right? Like, kind of like go on that inward journey and actually experience life. So I feel like adopting Bitcoin and doing your due diligence and your reflection and whatnot, right, in order to get to a point where you understand and believe that this could be a beneficiary financial decision for your life, you know, after that comes life, right? And so I think when you decide to do a podcast or want to contribute to Bitcoin, I feel like there's this natural progression where there's also space for other people to be more like, you know, the maxi bulldogs or whatever. I still think I'm a maxi bulldog, by the way. But what it's given me is really this, yeah, literally this mind space to go on this inner journey and explore, you know, the more philosophical and spiritual quest that I think is part of life. And it has given me a lot, like it's really improved my life. And so when I was thinking about like, okay, what, you know, it's Bitcoin for millennials, like the millennials need Bitcoin, but okay, once you figure out Bitcoin, what comes after? Like, what is the goal of opting out of this fiat money system, right? Well, the goal is to be mentally free and have time and space to, explore and build and grow your life. And I think there are so many more subjects and people to talk about and talk with that I think for me are just really interesting to explore. And I also kind of feel like this transition to freedom for millennials kind of puts me back in this beginner mindset student seat, right? Like I am the actual subject of my podcast, right? Like I adopted Bitcoin. I think I freed my mind to a certain degree. Okay, so what is next? Like what else is there to explore? And I think it's just a great way to keep on learning and to keep my interest fresh and my energy fresh. And so that's kind of the thoughts around that. And then, you know, moving to this gathering that we're organizing, you know, in the realm of these thoughts, I was also thinking like, oh, it would be so cool to have like a gathering or a retreat, if you want to call it that. I don't really like that word, but like, you know, of millennials that are at a certain place, have a certain way of thinking, and yeah, just putting them together, organizing, you know, whatever valuable stuff we could do in a few days together, and then just see where that could lead. And I shared that on X, and I had a lot of traction on that. Like a lot of people thought that could be interesting. And, you know, when you have a free mind and like to learn, the kind of motto of, you know, you can just do the thing, you know, you could just do things. I think it's kind of what we're manifesting here, and it's almost full. And I just think it's going to be really interesting. Like what happens when you get to an altered state of consciousness and try to kind of explore together, you know, what this big picture future of Bitcoin could be. I have no clue what's going to come from that, but I'm interested to see where we end up. And so it's a really high level, high value private type gathering. It's very curated, so anyone can apply, but we have like multiple calls and stuff to really kind of like curate this first group. And when it's a success, then I think there will be more, because just this whole idea of going beyond Bitcoin, something that I keep on coming back to, right? Like there's much life after finding Bitcoin, luckily.
A lot to dig into there, and we're going to the philosophy, the sort of, we can get into the psychedelics. We'll talk about going beyond Bitcoin. I'm very interested in that. And so, you know, you mentioned though that one of the reasons that you were inspired to start Bitcoin for Millennials was my episode with Bob Burnett. And I want you to know that still matters to me. What did it feel like to be listening to a podcast and realize you had to go make one?
Yeah, that's great. It felt very logical. Like it felt, it's the same as, you know, like on this Bitcoin journey, there are many of these like sound bites that I heard people say where I was like, yeah, that is true. Right. And I don't have anything to counter to that. So I'm just going to adopt that as true and act on it. Like one of these things is, you know, legendary Greg Foss saying, you know, fiat monetary debasement is mathematically assured. You know, once I start really thinking about that, I'm like, yeah, this is a path that's going to end in a very bad place. And, you know, and there's multiple of these things. And I think what Bob said, I don't know it verbatim, but it was more about, it was something around like, you know, Bitcoin is the most important, like technological discovery in this lifetime. Right. And, I think, this is what Bob said, right? Like, I think it's too valuable to not contribute to or something like that. And then, yeah, it just clicked for me. Like, yes, I have to do something. I didn't really know what, right? Like, the podcast didn't really crystallize or whatever. But I felt like I really had to do something. Yeah. When Bob said that, I just knew I had to do it. Basically, it wasn't really that fancy. It was just like, okay, this is my call to action. Now let's figure out how I can put, you know, the skills I have to work for this bigger thing that I'm going to watch for the rest of my life, right? Like I'm going to watch how this Bitcoin thing is going to play out. And, yeah, that's kind of how it came about.
You've been studying money for over 3,000 hours. Where does that journey take you once you've truly understood Bitcoin? What's on the other side of the orange pill?
Ooh. Well, I think what is before the orange pill, I say this a lot, like is a big fat red pill, right? I just saw a thread of Breedlove today. You know, he talks about, you know, the question, what is money, is the, I don't know, he says something like it's the defining question of our age, right? And it's so true. So I want to talk what comes after the orange pill, but I think I kind of said that now, like you kind of get out of the fiat enchantment or circus or whatever, right? I mean, imagine it's so crazy that this week, is that tomorrow or like this week, you know, all these people are going to watch Jerome Powell again, see what words, you know, come out of his mouth. And based on what this one guy says, you know, trillions of dollars are going to move or not, or, you know, people are going to do whatever. Like it's just a prime example of how crazy it actually is that there's this point on top of the tree, right? That people are looking at and waiting for, you know, what influences their decision. And, you know, it sounds kind of naive because I think a lot of people would say, well, that is just, you know, how the world works. But the crazy part is once you understand how Bitcoin works, like you don't need that, right? The whole point is that it is not centralized. Like it's a fair and honest base layer. So you, who's, you know, operating on top of that, like you can actually make like free decisions. And I think that is so, so foreign to people that we could potentially get there, that their initial reaction to, you know, something I would say would be like, oh no, that's naive. Like that's never going to change or whatever. Right. But they are captured in this system that is created for them to not understand it, right? And that's my connection with this red pill thing. Like for me, I don't know if I probably shared that in our last episode, but like there have been many touch points where I just realized, okay, I don't know what this fiat money system is. I'm still acting in it. I thought I was an actor, but I'm not, right? Like I'm a subject. So, and I think I'm smart enough and I read stuff and I try to be informed and whatever. And then I had so many points where I just realized that I was an idiot, that I had no clue what I was actually participating in. And my point here is like, there's many more people that are way more oblivious, you know, even think about them. Like they don't even know this question exists. Right. But once you start asking this question and you start going down the rabbit hole, and like for me, what I alluded to was, you know, I was 30, I had a mortgage, I worked at a bank, and then I was already a bit into Bitcoin. Then I had a colleague tell me, did you know the money in the bank is not yours, right? And I was like, what are you talking about? And then we had lunch for like an hour and he explained it to me. And that's one of those moments where I just walked away and felt like an idiot, right? Like, I have no clue how this works. And I also know that I am not the actor, right? But I want to be the actor. Like I don't want to have the feeling. And I think that's kind of like the first part, right? That's like the first fork in the road where once you encounter that, you have a choice to make, right? Like literally red pill, blue pill, as in, okay, I'm okay with the fact that there's this constructed thing outside of me that I can never understand. And people with no faces, no names, I have no clue, you know, they decide over me and therefore influence this. And I'm okay with that, or I'm not. And then I have an even bigger problem, right? Which is, okay, but then what, right? And so I think that there's a lot of people that get close to this point, but they don't want to go there, right? And you see that on X, for example, all the time. Like I saw a clip from Brennan Gentile with what's his name? Mike Green.
Yeah.
Mike Green.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a super well-respected finance economics guy, something. I don't know his background, but like, you know, a lot of people know. And then when you hear this person talk, all I'm thinking is like, you don't want to acknowledge you're part of a huge Ponzi, right? Like you don't want to acknowledge that fiat money is a scam, because if you acknowledge that fiat money is a scam, like his whole paradigm, like how his life is built, his education, his job, his career, like it all kind of, I don't want to say it falls apart, but it gets huge cracks, right? And I think a lot of people just don't want to do that. And for me, this is also the tie to the spirituality and the psychedelics part eventually. It's like, yeah, but you're lying to yourself, right? And if you got rich off fiat money, like I think Mike Green is more than affluent, right? Yeah, you also don't really care, right? Like, why would you care? Why would you care to admit that this is a flawed system, right? Like, you know, he has no incentive to admit that. But the funny part is then that truly arguments people use, and this is, you know, I think what people don't like about Bitcoin maximalism is that Bitcoin maxis constantly point that out, right? Like, you are using a retarded argument, right? Like Mike Green said, well, what if I lose my USB with my Bitcoin, right? Like, then what? And it's like, dude, this is a practical argument, right? Like, what if you lose your gold coins in the mud or on the sea, right? Then they're also gone, right? So it's you're using a practical argument to kind of deflect the philosophical discussion that you should have about the what is money question, right? Because he would also probably say, well, you know, if I get scammed for, I don't know, 100K, I call my bank and then, you know, I'm insured and then the 100K is back. Yeah, but dude, it's all fake, right? Like, as long as you don't admit it's all fake, then, you know, you can keep on talking like this. And I think that's kind of the essence. Like, that's for me, that's the starting point I've identified, is like, you either accept that there is this created reality by a third party around you and you are oblivious to it. You think you're using it to your benefit, which you're not, right? You think that outsourcing, you know, responsibility over whatever, many things in your life, right? Food, money, children, all these things, that is just part of it. And you can just trust these other people. But, you know, once you start thinking, and not in a bad way, but, you know, these other people are just other people. Like, who are these people, right? So how do you get to a point where you can really trust another person to do XYZ job that you're outsourcing to them, right? That's also another core for me. When you think about the money, right? Why is the money such a big starting question for all these other rabbit holes as well? If money is the most important technology in the world, you could argue, right? Because it communicates what we value, right? Like, we can do that in total freedom, right? But then the thing we use to exchange the value, that is influenced by a third party that we don't even know, and they don't even know us. And they are just other people with the same life issues as you and me, right? Their ego and desires and wants and like just the life experience. And so if that essential act of communication basically is corrupted by at least half of the action, right, then everything after that is also corrupted, or let's say corruptible. And for me, when you then get to the question, okay, but is this by accident or is this on purpose, right? Well, I think the honest answer is that it is on purpose. Okay, so then the next step is, okay, well, if this is on purpose and no one ever really told me what money is, right? I also always share, like, I've had masters of economics, right? Double PhD, whatever, on the podcast, and they all say, like, well, we always did stuff during the study and we calculated units, right? But we never had a philosophical discussion about what money is. So if these people don't even know, right? And they are basically instructed to play their little role in this bigger scheme. Then you and I, as general plebs, you know, we never even get close to whatever they were taught, which also isn't the full picture of fiat money, right? And for me, when you look at that and you realize that fiat money is a giant illusion, is a giant scam to control you, and it's arguably the most important technology, at least for communication in the world, then yeah, what else isn't true? If the most important thing isn't true, then, you know, what else isn't true? And I think you cannot get there without actually taking that first red pill, like accepting that you don't know everything and being okay with that, you know, even coming to terms that, you know, you were just a blind, oblivious idiot participating in a system that is not benefiting you. That's okay, right? Like, it's okay. And I think everyone who's into Bitcoin got to that point where they decided that even though that realization wasn't nice, it was the truth, right? And after that, they started acting upon that acknowledgement, and, you know, they found Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, yeah. Thankfully, we found Bitcoin. But I mean, cause sort of like maybe trying to understand this, because this is ancient wisdom. Sort of like we think of all these as modern problems, but like, you know, these problems are not new. Even the Greeks had a word like skole, which I think is for school. I'm probably saying that word. Like, can you unpack that word and sort of how the Greeks saw school?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? I always thought that, you know, accomplishment that I figured out Bitcoin without actually having the problem, right? I always thought, you know, the people that live in the places where the money is being debased, you know, Lebanon, Mozambique, or wherever, like these places with crazy inflation, that these people would actually figure this out, you know, right at that time. And I always thought, like, well, I figured it out without actually experiencing the problem, right? But later I realized that in order to think, right, and to contemplate and to reflect and to, well, basically change your mind, right? Change whatever your belief was or what you thought your understanding was, you know, or the realization that you were an idiot and just had no clue. You need time and space for that contemplation, right? So actually having that time and place for that contemplation is an extreme luxury nowadays, right? In the West, we still have it more than the people in the countries that I just mentioned, right? Like, these people don't even have the time and space to understand what is really going on. So once I realized that, you know, I understood it wasn't an accomplishment, but more like a privilege, right? That I was able to figure that out. But yeah, the word you mentioned, I also think it's like skull or skole, you know, like they were more talking about, like a moment for leisure, like free, more like a freer time to think, right? Like if you were doing stuff during the day, whatever your job was, right? The idea that you should have time and space for your inner life and just that contemplation and rest, basically, also of your mind, is just an extremely important thing. And this again also ties to fiat money. This is an article and a video that I'm going to put out, but this whole fiat money system, right? It's designed to keep you a consumer, right? It is all built, well, you know, fundamentally, a fiat money system has to grow. I do grow in air quotes because usually it's nominal growth, right? So it has to be plus XYZ percent GDP growth or whatever. Not real growth, right? But like nominal growth. Okay, so, and this is what the idea, you know, what the Keynesian ideology also is, right? Like, well, if the money is debased a little bit, we create this incentive for people to spend it, right? And it's so interesting to think about, what they mean by that, because what they mean is not that the people can follow their own urges and interests and whatever. No, they are incentivized to do that, right? But when you look at nature is all about equilibrium, right? Like some things go up, then it goes down, then it goes up, and it's looking for that equilibrium, basically. But in order to find an equilibrium, when it goes good, you have to allow bad times to happen too, right? And when it goes bad, that's the breeding ground for stuff that, you know, can be born out of that again, and then it goes good, and et cetera. But in a fiat money system, because it's fundamentally flawed and these people know it, right? It's all about the stimulation of consumption and therefore, again, air quotes, growth. So by influencing the reward that people get for spending their finite time and energy in their job or in their venture, which, you know, conceptually you could say that's all a free choice as to how you apply your intellect, right? Whether you want to start a business or just have a job, like it's all risky in a different way. So that is kind of part of, you know, your own autonomy, if you want to call it like that. But again, the reward that people get for that is influenced in a way that it loses its value. So what that does to the incentive for people is that they are incentivized to consume, right? Because the fundamentally below it, the fiat system has to show growth. So that all goes against kind of the natural flows of booms and busts, for example, right? And that, it also, in that sense, kind of goes against the, ebbs and flows of a human life. Like sometimes you want to chill, sometimes you want to work hard, sometimes you feel like you want to build something, sometimes you feel like you don't want to do shit, right? Like, but if this consumer mindset is put on you, because this is what Seb Bunny told me, I love that. He said, all the money you have today is worth the most today. You know, and tomorrow is already a little tiny bit less. Just that idea is also crazy, right? Because that shows you that if you want to build, if you want to do something that maybe takes 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, right? Like 500 years ago, there were people our age that were working on whatever structure that maybe would be finished after they were dead. And they were happy participating in that construction, right? Or trying to, you know, try to build a company or a big building or whatever. Like, because of fiat money, it is extremely hard to actually be a builder, and especially a long-term builder, right? Like, if you want to build something of quality or of beauty, then it's going to take some time. But if the capital you're using to fund the time and space to think about what you want to do, then actually do it, then buy the materials or the whatever. Then you cannot plan for that. And the easier way is to just be a consumer, right? To just, you know, have fun, you know, high time preference. I kind of forgot your question, but for me, this is how the structural flaws of fiat money and the has an effect on you and me as the individual, right? That's what they want you to do. And therefore, everything around you is created and you're nudged in a way to, you know, show that behavior. But eventually, it is not beneficial to your experience of your life. If you don't have that time and space to contemplate, oh yeah, that's what we were talking about, then maybe you feel like you're doing things and you are the actor, like I felt, but you're not really. And there are people that understand this and there are people that don't. And this idea of being aligned with just the flow of reality of nature is of course extremely old. Like that is true, like Gnostic, you know, esoteric knowledge that many people before us very far back in time already knew. And you know, diving into that more has also shown me how crazy fiat money basically is, right? It is basically, I never thought I would say this word a few years ago, but it is modern slavery. It's a modern slavery without you knowing it, right? Because it is just like, it's a psychological trick to keep you moving and moving and moving towards a direction that is, well, the direction is changing, right? And the destination is also changing up until a point that you think there's a destination, but it's so undefined. And people are also still okay with that, right? And I find that personally very, very difficult to also see with just people that I know that I love, right? They're just, you know, captured in this and, you know, unknowingly. And it's quite hard to get out of that, I think.
Yeah, for sure. You think about sort of that push and pull relationship. One way, you know, a lot of people want to know, like, how many dollars is it going to take for me to retire? How many dollars will I need in the future? How many Bitcoin will I need or want to have to retire? And Jeff Booth answered this in a very interesting way. I mean, you can't really put a number on any of those. Everyone's different. But in dollar terms, the dollar number will always be going up as you try to approach it. You will always need more and more dollars in the future. Then, you know, you sort of pick your number now, that number goes up. Whereas in Bitcoin terms, whatever you think you need now, that number goes down over long periods of time. And I want to hear more about going beyond Bitcoin. You know, like what is this gathering, what you're trying to create? And like the way I kind of think about that, like Bitcoin and psychedelics at first glance, that seems like an unusual pairing.
It's a niche.
But you're, you know, like you're bringing them together. Yeah. Why do you think they come together?
Well, I had Yoni Appelberg on the podcast. I don't know if you know him. He's a doctor and also like a psychonaut, psychedelic explorer and huge Bitcoiner. And he told me, you know, Bitcoin is an economic psychedelic or a financial psychedelic, right? And it ties into what we were just talking about. You know, once you see or think you understand how fiat money is constructed, right? You also understand that this entire reality around you is constructed. And the funny part, the connection with psychedelics is that if you go down the consciousness and psychedelics path, you realize that you are the person that creates this constructed reality, right? Like you are a spiritual being having a physical experience in this life, and everything around you is just light and vibration that comes in through the lenses of your eyes and gets computed literally in the computer in your head, and that is your experience of this reality, right? So you have an orange shirt on, right? If you know, if you would say like what's the color, I would say orange, you would say orange, but in reality, it is a light spectrum that gets computed in my head in a certain way and in your head in a certain way. And we gave it the label orange, right? But we never know if the orange is computed the same in your head as it is in my head, right? So once you study this and you figure out, well, you know, it is all it's like a virtual reality. There's people that say like, this is a, it's a virtual reality and the computer's in your head and you are the observer of the reality, right? And psychedelics can kind of help you poke through that veil of reality and kind of get to a point where you're closer to, you know, the eternal consciousness, your spirit, however you want to call that, and kind of see and experience, be there, and experience what you really are, right? And I think the bridge with fiat money is that Bitcoin is a way to kind of like poke through the veil of fiat money, because Bitcoin is just this parallel money system that just exists. And because it's so extremely transparent and anyone can check it for themselves, right? And it's immutable. So it's basically an absolute truth, right? If you verify Bitcoin right now and I do that, we see the exact same thing, like literally the exact same thing. There's no difference, even though we are in different locations, in different time zones or whatever. But when you compare that to your orange shirt, like I just said, we don't know if it's the same in my head as it is in your head. But when we verify Bitcoin, we know it's exactly the same, right? So Bitcoin is engineered truth. It's like a truth anchor that we can agree upon is something that, how do you say, like we both see in the same thing, but more absolute than the orange shirt. I hope that makes sense. So if you think about Bitcoin as this economic psychedelic, right, and you poke through this veil of fiat money and you see that it's all fake and constructed, etc., and that you can actually move to the experience of a different reality because you understand what Bitcoin is, and that Bitcoin is a total 180, obviously, of fiat money, then when you get into psychedelics, you will see that it is basically the same experience, right? You had a picture of this reality and then you realize that it is constructed, and then you can use a tool, a natural tool, to actually go to a place where you can observe the paradigm or the construct that you were first in. And because you can observe it from a distance, it becomes possible for you to be more objective about what this structure is. Like, if it benefits you, do you want to still participate in that or not? Like, how would you want to participate in it differently? And so the fun part is that, in like you said, like at first glance, it seems like very far away. But I have to say, like, the interest has been overwhelming. Like, there's a lot of people that experience this in a similar way, what I just said. And also, that is just a huge signal for me that Bitcoin is something extremely special. Like, how crazy is it that there is this open source technology? It's just code, right, that anyone can adopt and anyone can gain value from once they adhere to its rules, right, to the protocol. And that so many people from all these different walks of life, right, and all these different types of backgrounds get to the same conclusion. So for me, there's a signal in there. And like I said in the beginning, this gathering is kind of an attempt to see, okay, if we bring this together, like, what can come out of that? Like, still, I don't know. I don't know what will come out of it. I will know something will come out of it, because there's just too many people that see the same similarities and have the similar experience.
Yeah. Well, Pam and I want to go. We want to go. One way I've seen, I did a show with Fractal and Crypt on Bitcoin and psychedelics, and, you know, they both bring you sort of independence and sovereignty. One way I've seen psychedelics is that sort of like, maybe your mind is like a house with many rooms, and psychedelics, I think, could give you sort of a key to rooms that you have maybe had difficulty getting into. And you can kind of then, you know, the door is now permanently unlocked, and you can kind of come and go as you want with or without using psychedelics again. But I do think, sort of my reading with Timothy Leary, I think you have to be, if you have these truly sort of maybe trips that are supposed to sort of like improve your reality, or I don't think that's the right way to put it, but you want to come in at a higher level. I think environment and sort of doing it the right way, and make, you know, that you're ready for it and all that. You don't want to come in lower, at a lower vibe, you know.
No, that's the whole point, right? And so we have medical doctors there. We have highly experienced facilitators there. It's all natural medicine legally in Colorado. I have to add to that. And you're exactly right. You know, like it is. I would say my experience is that you can get to a point where you can actually be or like experience what you are, which is the observer of all of this, right? And once you see that basically what you are is something that exists forever, then this experience in this physical body, I don't want to say becomes less important. I don't want to say that the end of it, the death, right? The physical death, etc. At least for me, that becomes less important, and you become more grateful, I think, of the fact that you can actually experience this physical life, right? That in essence, what you are experiencing here is yourself, right? You are the consciousness yourself. Experiencing yourself here, basically forever, and it's always in the now, right? Like, but when you are manifested into this physical body, and you are here, and the mind and the brain, right? They are all part of this physical body. We start to kind of conflate the creations of the mind with the actual reality, right? And so the creations of the mind are words, are actions, certain constructs that are created, and that is all part of the physical world, right? While what you actually are is a spiritual being. And oh, I kind of see that now, and I see that with young children, right? Like I have young children. They are so pure. They don't know about the construct, right? They literally fall into this physical body and they grow up in it. And, you know, they look around and there's all these constructs and rules and ways that people behave and ways that things work, et cetera, et cetera. And you start to identify with that more because you are in this body, right? But over time, that's kind of what I'm seeing also. You know, it's kind of an age also, that people start coming back slowly, or they get to this point where they understand that there's this, they think there's this duality. Later they get to the non-duality, but I feel like it's part of this journey to kind of prep you for your death, right? Mm-hmm. Because eventually you will go to where you came from, right? And maybe where we go to after death, right? Eventually becomes the place where you come from again, but then in a different incarnation or whatever, right? And so I think that just this journey is again something that has been talked about for thousands of years, and is also something that I think modern times kind of took away from us. And this is also why the money part is so connected, what we just talked about, right? If fiat money keeps you constantly distracted and doesn't give you this leisure time or contemplation time, then how could you ever get to a point where you can even start this journey in a conscious way, literally?
Yeah, no, I there's a book I'm looking up now. I think it's it's on my shelf. I just don't have it in front of me. It's like the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And I think it was augmented by Timothy Leary, and it's sort of like a way to sort of, to manage your ecstasy or MDMA experience. And that the real point of the Tibetan Book of the Dead is more about a book for the living. And so you're sort of preparing for death, which is sort of the beginning of life in this view, I guess. You wrote that spiritual growth and perpetual financial anxiety are structurally incompatible. And you're not just saying Bitcoin makes you wealthy. You're saying it's a prerequisite for inner life. Can you really unpack that?
Well, this all ties in together. So I'm very happy to have this conversation. I hope I'm able to convey it in a clear way, these ideas that I have. So if your attention and your energy is literally constantly hijacked by these persuasive instructions, habits, stories, you know, whatever is influencing us to, you know, be that consumer instead of that builder, to be focused on the outside, right? The outside as in the physical world and everything that's happening there and everything you should own there and do there and et cetera, right? If you're constantly, yeah, persuaded to be in that place, you can never be in that inner place. And so that's why I think I said this on a Breedlove's podcast. Like I think this is like, it's like a spiritual crime to keep you away from actually being able to go on that inner journey. But again, like once you realize that you can basically, it's so funny, like you can kind of like opt out of fiat money. It's literally what Timothy Leary said. I don't know the wait, I'm looking it up now. Chant, right? Like he said, what did he say? Like turn on, tune in, drop out, right? And so what he meant by turn on is like literally turn on, like you're an antenna, you're a consciousness antenna, right? Like you should turn on. You take LSD, you turn on and you tune in to whatever it is that has been given to you. And then you realize that this is not the real reality, that the real reality, the truth, is something that you always are, that you can always go to. So you can tune out from this, you know, scripted and constructed paradigm reality. And it is a very short bridge to the fiat money paradigm and the enchantment that we talked about, right? Literally it's called the Bitcoin matrix. Like it's literally a matrix and you go into a different matrix, the Bitcoin matrix. And then, you know, this is what Jeff Booth says, right? Like you can only view the old matrix when you are out of it, when you can actually look at it from the outside. And it's the same construct. So once you can get outside of this physical experience of the reality and thinking that that is all there is and you are your thoughts and all these things. And once you get out of that and you look at that, you see and understand because you are it, right? It's not information. You are in that place in this psychedelic journey where you are the observer of your thoughts, your emotions, and your actions, which are all part of this physical body that is not you, right? The real you is the observer you. And so in that way, once you get out of, you know, let's say you were sitting in the fiat money paradigm, I always see it as like this dome or something, I don't know, and you start sitting in the Bitcoin paradigm and then you look at this fiat paradigm, it's the same thing. Because you have found this new truth that no one else told you about, right? Because you are able to verify it for yourself. You are able to get the information, verify it, reflect on it, and then decide if you find that important or not. But one, and that's the red and blue pill in the beginning that I talked about. So once you decide, hey, this thing is totally different and the incentives are aligned here and this is way more beneficial for my, you know, longer term outlook on my life. If you then look at this fiat money paradigm, it looks ridiculous. It looks stupid because why would you ever follow Jerome Powell or whoever the person is, the next person in the chair is, right? And that's the whole point. It's like, you know, it's all these memes in Bitcoin, rules versus rulers, right? Are you going to follow a baseline set of rules or what ruler 1, 2, or 3 says on the TV? And that is for me the essence of it. So it's just a similar experience of taking distance, looking at your old paradigm, understanding that that is not true, and then finding something that is grounded in truth.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife and I, Mrs. Bitcoin Matrix, we're really into raising consciousness and vibe. This idea that inner state shapes your outer reality. It's funny, you know, you look at sort of a computer, like I see you on the computer, but you're not really in the computer. It's just zeros and ones, right? And you know, you're not really there. How does Bitcoin connect to that for you? Sort of, you know, your inner state to your outer reality.
Well, this is also, I think Gigi talked about this, right? Like what you're talking about is like the map is not the territory, right? Like you are seeing me on the screen, but it's not me on the screen. Like I'm sitting here. And so when you are walking around with a map and you're looking at the map is not the real thing, right? The, where you're standing is the real thing, and the map is an abstraction of that. And so with fiat money, like we talked about, when we have that exchange, right, finite time and energy exchanged for something that can be created infinitely, that is not a correct map to the territory. It's not a correct abstraction of the thing you're abstracting. But Bitcoin is the map and the territory in the same thing, just like, you know, my time and energy is also just one thing. Does that make sense? Like, I have X, Y, Z, you know, X amount of time and energy in my life. I don't know how much. I can be dead tomorrow or in 50 years, right? But I know that it's a defined thing. I can see, you know, on average lifespan is 80, whatever. So I can have some sort of number, right? But I have it or I don't, right? It's gone or not. And so with fiat money is not a good abstraction of that, but Bitcoin is the map and the territory by itself, right? It's the unit and the thing you are measuring at the same time. So when we talk about verifying Bitcoin, that is looking at the map. But when you are looking at your wallet with, you know, a number of Bitcoin in it, you're looking at the map, but it's also the thing. It's not an abstraction. You're looking at the source of the truth, basically. And I think with what we talked about with this spirituality and the consciousness, it's the same thing, right? Like, if you identify with, you know, I'm Cedric and I was born there and there and in this place, and this is what I do, and this is my body, and this is, you know, these are my thoughts and my this and that, right? It's an abstract from what you really are, but it's not a correct abstract. Does that make sense? Like, it's not the same thing. And so because it is not the same thing, it is really hard, I would say, to kind of like see what either the connection is or the truth is, right? Because you could also be looking at a map or like Google Maps, and then looking around and being like, hey, I'm looking at Google Maps, but I still don't know where I am, right? Like, or how do I know that this map is correct? Or maybe you're looking at a paper map. But again, with Bitcoin, it's just, it is there or it's not there. And so, again, once you have this psychedelic or spiritual experience and you understand, because you experience it, this is really hard to explain, because you are there or you're not, right? Like, I can talk about what the experience is like, but only when you get there, you're like, ah, that is what he was talking about. Like, now I'm there. Like, it's not like it's information that gets to you. It's how you are being, basically. And so once you get there, it's the same mechanism. You understand that where you are is what you are. Whereas now here in this physical body, if you're not aware of that, you think that, you know, this is it, basically. And so yeah. I think there's the back and forth between understanding Bitcoin and seeing, again, the different paradigm. It is just, you know, if that exists, if that mechanism exists in the money sense with Bitcoin, yeah, you start on seeing that in all these different places, among them, you know, the consciousness part.
Wow. So talking about being in awareness, what is the bandwidth tax and what did learning about it unlock for you?
Well, that is what I just talked about, right? No, there's only so much time that you can spend, or attention you can give, or energy you can expend in a conscious way, right? And so when you're constantly distracted, you know, you only, let's say you have a set bandwidth for the day, and you know, it's always naturally different for different people. yeah, again, once you see that part of that bandwidth is stolen, right, or at least filled up by a lot of sources like outside of you, I think there's two steps. One is just realizing that that is the case. Two, looking at it. Again, I think some people would say like, oh, it's naive because, you know, stuff just happens in your life. You know, there's just stuff that happens. That is correct. But are they all things that, you know, should logically happen? Or is there part of this bandwidth that's taken from me where it's the point that it's taken from me so that I don't have the bandwidth to actually think about why that is happening to me? Does that make sense? Right. Like that's,
yeah.
And that's what I talked about in the beginning. Like if you are just occupied with, you know, paycheck to paycheck, or what does Jerome Powell say, or what is now on the news, or there's another war, or this and that, like the whole point is that you're distracted. And again, it's also something from way before they talked about the bread and games in the times of the Romans, right? You know, now bread and games is even worse. It's even worse, right? Like, you know, it goes from the Super Bowl to just TikTok. Mm-hmm. TikTok or just ugly architecture or ugly art or bad music or, you know, some person on TV said XYZ. What do you think of that, right? And it's all these things to put your mental capacity and energy towards so that you don't have this reflective time to actually contemplate what is going on.
Yeah, now it was really fascinating, not only the time, because you mentioned this study that Mullen Nathan and Shafir did in 2013, where like 13 to 14 IQ points are lost to financial worry. It's like more than sleep deprivation.
It's crazy, yeah. And they did it. It's not that those are people that had lower IQs. It was like in the same person.
Right.
And they put them in a certain situation and totally. Then in another situation. Yeah.
Now, could you imagine if you're talking to the, you know, so the average adult American has an education level of sixth grade. And I'm talking about sixth grade today, not sixth grade 100 years ago when sixth grade was hard. And now they've just knocked 13 to 14 IQ points off because they're worried. And then another 13 to 14 IQ points off because they didn't sleep because they were worried. And you know why sometimes you're talking to someone and you're trying to explain what is money or not try to explain. You're having this conversation, a dialogue, and you're just like, I get it. You're regarded. You're not going to, you're just a little too tired to figure this out. I mean,
yeah. And that's the point. But this is extremely important, right? Like, that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to find a better term, but I usually use the word like Disneyfication or something. Mm-hmm. Like when you watch Disney movies, or just cartoons, like this idea that, you know, 300-500 years ago, you had kings, right? Or you had, sometimes there were bad people that ruled the country and they were asking all these things from their citizens. And that was bad, 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 right? And that was not good. And then, you know, a hero came and slayed the king and yada, yada, yada. But now, you know, in 2026, we've grown out of that. Like we're all just, you know, highly moral beings and no one is corrupt. Like that doesn't exist anymore, right? Like in the entertainment that we've seen, this picture is created that like that is a thing of the past. I wonder if you agree with that. And so because of that, because this extreme propaganda, basically, it doesn't even get in our minds that literally what you just said, right? For the people that have sleepless nights or feel like, you know, they're not in control of their lives and living paycheck to paycheck while they're doing everything they thought they should be doing, right? Like getting an education and a job and it isn't that and so. Once you, again, it's a red or blue pill moment, right? If you cannot accept that there will always be people that will take advantage, you know, of people that are less aware than them, if you just don't get to agreeing that that will always be the case. In essence, unfortunately, I think, you know, it's that everyone is corruptible, even you and me, right? If you can take advantage of a certain position or situation that you're in to benefit your own life or that of your children, you would 100% do it. And if that would be a disadvantage for 1,000 other people. If you don't know their faces, their names, and they're very distant from you, you probably wouldn't care. I think if you're really honest about that, you know, that is just the case. But actually acknowledging that, right, and just understanding that there will always be people that take advantage of other people. If you don't want to acknowledge that, just like Mike Green, right, who still is like a high trust systems guy, you're never going to see it because you first have to accept that that is just the case. It's a messed up realization, right? And I do think that once you get there, you will understand that, you know, whenever you find this resistance and this feeling of like, oh no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to know that. This cannot be true, or else, you know, my whole paradigm, you know, falls apart. The funny thing is that after all that resistance is actually a feeling of freedom, because the burden, like the unknowing burden that you had, is also lifted, right? The fact that it doesn't mean your situation becomes instantly better, but if you understand that there is a certain mechanism behind you living paycheck to paycheck and being anxious and you know, looking at another assassination attempt or whatever is on the news, or killer hornets or whatever is on the news to make you scared, right? Then you tune out, literally, you know, Timothy Leary, you tune out. And then you start getting back this bandwidth bit by bit. And that's also what I meant when I said in the beginning, you know, it frees your mind. I think it ties into this. Like, just, you're just shedding off stuff that was put in your head to keep you unaware of what you should actually be thinking about.
Right. Yeah.
Do you agree with the Disneyfication thing? Or I still don't know.
I do. I think it's actually much more deep, like not more deep. I think it's just so prevalent in so many ways beyond the Disneyfication. I think it's like maybe the law and order of society. I don't know if you've ever seen that show. It's one of the longest running shows on television. I think that just makes people feel like crime and people are weird stuff. Like, just it makes people feel like very uncomfortable.
It's abstraction. It's not the real thing. You're watching an entertainment version of the bad guy. So it's like the bad guy doesn't really exist.
I think it actually makes people feel like the bad guy does exist, that there's like these terribly unsolvable crimes and rampant highly qualified criminals that are coming for them. And so while they're watching, like, I just feel like my mom, like, is just, she takes this stuff as candy and it's just background noise, and she treats it like talk radio, and she likes being near the characters, but it makes her think the world is a really, really scary place because she's with people that are solving very difficult crimes all day. And these crimes are violent and they're psychological, and she doesn't realize she's like engulfing this. It's kind of like, you know, the girl who eats too many blueberries in Willy Wonka, like, you know, it's good for you until it's not. It's entertainment, but it's making you feel like the world is a bad place. Or to your point, like Disneyfication, like that we've kind of matured and we've intellectualized ourselves beyond that kind of society. We're so beyond it. So much of that stuff. And I think there's priming and all those. I hate to digress and ramble. While I have you, you're writing a book. Yes, what is it and who's it for? What's the core thesis? Who needs to read it?
Yeah, so this is a long, I have a lot of things that always have had a lot of things at the same time. So this book is taking a long time. I'm at podcast episode 250, and this book is based upon the first 100 episodes. So I took all the transcripts from those episodes, and the book is obviously called Bitcoin for Millennials, but I really wanted to, I had this outline for the book for a very long time, and it's the core thesis is really around, you know, if you are a millennial who grew up in the West, you probably grew up in the best time to ever grow up for any person, right? And you never really had to think about a lot of the things that we are talking about right now. Like, there was just water and shelter and food, and the money just worked. And, you know, there was progression and the internet and iPhones and iPad and, you know, iPods. You know, I love the iPod. And so it was good, and there was progression, right? It was noticeably better. until you get to, you know, early 30s, mid 30s, and you kind of get to see that this path that was sold to you or told to you logically also, right, it doesn't really exist anymore. And it's things like, you know, get an education, you know, go into debt to some degree, then you get a job and you can buy a home and you can do X, Y, Z and this and that, you know, you buy your first home, you sell it, you buy your second home and you grow and, you know, and then eventually you retire and so on. But like you said, if you really do the calculation right, even with 2% inflation, then after 35 years, so if you're early 30s and you still have to work for 35 years, you will have lost 50% of your purchasing power if inflation actually is 2%, which is the baseline ideology and policy, right? So you already need twice as many money units for your retirement, which is just a crazy thing to realize, I would say. And because it's so far away, a lot of people just don't really care about it, right? But that combined with the time we live in where this mathematical assurance of fiat money debasement is only accelerating, you know, maybe you need five times as much money units. And do social services even exist when you are retiring and all these things? So I think this idea of how millennials saw the future has changed, and a lot of millennials can't really construct what that new version of the future looks like, other than quite desperate and dark and very unpredictable. And so I had this idea for an outline of the book where I wanted to take people along, you know, kind of like this arc where, you know, we are lucky to be alive today, but there's also a huge problem that you don't know you have, right? And so I talk about, you know, you go to work or your venture, you take risk, and then you come home and you have to mitigate this monetary debasement and you have to take more risk. Do you want to do that, right? And we I talk about a lot of things that we talked about, like how it, you know, occupies your mind and you're not able to actually see the path you're on and be able to make that change, etc. And so I had that outline, and then I thought about, like, how can I use all this knowledge, right, from all these people? This is 100 plus hours of podcasting. How can we take that and kind of like put it in that framework? So that's what I did. So I'm using AI, and in the beginning, this is also why it's taking so long. Like, the models were very basic, and now, you know, it's extremely good. So I'm constantly iterating on the book, but I would say it's like 85% finished or something, but I'm just taking my time. I'm distracted also with a lot of other, like, AI vibe coding, apps building and article writing and whatnot. So I don't really feel pressure other than my own, but it, you know, kind of comes in waves, but it's almost done. And I also feel like I've never really seen that concept of, like, someone doing that, taking 100 episodes from a podcast. So I felt like, hey, this is a fun new approach to a book, and also a way to hopefully orange pill my fellow millennials.
Well, it sounds awesome. I can't wait to read it. I spilled the beans a little bit. My wife has definitely asked me to do that many times with my first 100 episodes, and I've kind of toyed a bit with it a little bit. Maybe like a coffee table book is kind of what I was thinking. And then I loved your essay. You are not a consumer, you are a creator. I am kind of going through that exact conversion reversal you're describing, leaving fiat, my W-2 job, and building the Bitcoin matrix. I also really enjoyed the story about Michelangelo. And maybe you could just, before we roll out, tell that story a little bit.
Well, you know, this story is that he eventually ended up at this Medici family, which was like a really rich family in Florence. And that's also where the florin came from, right? Like this hard money at the time. And it was also through this experience. I think, you know, when I think about Michelangelo, like, it's also the cover image of the article, right? Like, this whole idea of Michelangelo, I read the word this week, but, like, there's this word for when you have, like, a stone
or like a block of marble that is not edited, right? And the Michelangelo kind of like philosophy is that you can already see what is in the marble, right? And for me, this connection to hard money and understanding what a hard money standard can do. And I also talked about this with Saifedean, which I thought was really nice, because we talked about a future where, you know, if hard money exists, does credit exist, etc. And his answer was no. And I'll tell you why. Like, if you have a limited time and energy, you really want to spend it on something that you honestly think is valuable, right? And on a hard money standard, if over time more and more people are incentivized to work harder, this is Lynn Alden has this skill, right? Like amount of goods and services and amount of money. If the money amount grows and becomes heavier, then the prices of the goods and services go up. But also people are not incentivized to make better products or services, because the reward that they're getting for it is not interesting enough. But on a hard money standard, the money side stays stable, and it's all about the productivity of people. And so when there is more competition, because there's a scarce amount of rewards, you are extremely incentivized and almost forced to really think about what am I going to spend my time and energy on. So bullshit ideas, ugly art, stupid businesses, all that stuff is going to go away, because there are no people that want to make that or invest in that. And so this kind of like Michelangelo angle with the Medicis, that, you know, they were in this place where there was this hard money use, basically. I think it's just a great story around like how experiencing that also gives you in some shape or form, I haven't fully distilled it, but like this motivation to do actual work and to explore and do all these different things, right? Like even Michelangelo, he painted the 16th chapel, he built these marble statues, etc. So he was really like a polymath type figure, like Da Vinci also, right? And that, I think, is where we eventually get to, because, and I'll tie this into what we talked about, right? If your future is more and more uncertain because your money is losing value, you cannot create time and space to explore something you find interesting and probably fail at it, right? And then try another thing and then fail at it and then try another thing and then fail. And then maybe you succeed, or you succeed on the second try and you find something that is your thing of adding value to the world. But you know, you can probably do that once, twice, maybe three times on a fiat money standard. But at some point, you know, you got to pay the bills and your money lost its value. You know, your capital lost its value. And you cannot do these trial and error endeavors, basically, to explore what you're good at and maybe even combine skills, and you create this whole new profession or art or, you know, whatever. And on a hard money standard, the interesting thing that I think exists there, at least conceptually, right? And we've seen, and this is what the story is about a bit in the history, is that on a hard money standard, you actually have the time and space to try out stuff, right? Like you can try something and then fail, and then try something else and fail, and then still have time and resources to actually try another thing. And so for me, that is also, again, like this big difference, like that second thing, like giving everyone the opportunity to actually explore what they would bring to the world, sounds way more appealing and way more positive than whatever is going on right now. And even in the Michelangelo example, the 16th chapel is still something that people revere, right? Like they go there and they are amazed by the intricacy and the fact that, you know, someone could actually produce something like that. You know, someone who's the exact same, at the exact same evolutionary level as us. Like he wasn't more special or whatever. But, you know, we can get there too. But the sad thing is that we're also very far away from it at the same time. But I like to look at it in a positive way, like it's something to aspire to, I would say.
Yeah. So I mean, you in your work, you talk about, I think you named this concept, the effort reward fracture. And, you know, in the fiat matrix, maybe we just get oysters. And in the Bitcoin matrix, maybe we get oysters and the pearl. This has been so dope, Bram. I'll leave it to you. Let people know where they can find you and your work and any parting words that you might have.
Well, thank you again. I really enjoy it talking to you, and I like the opportunity to be on the guest side and try to convey my thoughts that are constantly changing, also by the influence of luckily all these other people that I can talk to. So thanks for that opportunity. And yeah, where people can find me is mainly on X. I'm at BramK, B-R-A-M-K. And that's also my username on YouTube. And the podcast is called Bitcoin for Millennials on YouTube and Spotify, Apple, Fountain, all the places where you can listen to a podcast.
This has been so dope. We got to meet in Vegas a little over a year ago.
Yes.
I hope to see you again soon. It'll be fun.
Let's see.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you so much. That was awesome. We really packed a lot in there. I'll stop you. Hey. And that's a wrap on this one. If this conversation added value, share it with one person who needs to hear it. That is how the Bitcoin Matrix, where critical thinkers meet, grows. Huge thanks to our sponsors, Stampseed, Firefish, Club Orange, and Camp Nakamoto. These are companies and products I personally use and believe in. Please support them so they can keep supporting the show. Links and codes for all of them are in the show notes. Not on Fountain yet? $5 a month gets you every episode a full day early, completely ad-free, or $1 per episode after early access. Follow me on X. I'm at Sed Youngelman. The show is at _BitcoinMatrix. We're in the conversation every single day. The Matrix is real. Keep on stacking. Keep your head on a swivel. Spend your time well. And thank you for listening.